朝日新聞ポッドキャスト。
Hello everyone, my name is Noriko Akiyama of Asahi Shimbun Senior Writer. So, this special podcast program, so we offer the same content in English version and in Japanese version, so bilingual podcast program. Of course, it's English program. English learner, Japanese learner, let's improve our English and Japanese together with me. So today is the second episode. So today's fabulous guest is
Paul Christensen from Indiana in the United States.
Yeah. Paul, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
What's your job?
I'm a cultural anthropologist.
Cultural anthropologist. So what's your main research interest?
Right now, I'm starting something new. I'm working on a project in Tokyo about how people think about the future, how people understand and imagine what the future holds, what the future will look like. I'm particularly interested in thinking about how there's a contrast between what comes from the top, so the language, yeah. the images, the everything that comes maybe yes. from the Japanese government, especially now we've yes. had a lot of discussion of SDGs, and what happens at from the bottom yes. up. So some of the groups who are working, I'm particularly working yes. with groups who do support for the homeless in Tokyo, huh. and how they are thinking about, also thinking yeah. about the future, but maybe thinking about it in a very different way from what's coming from the top down. My view is that you have a somewhat empty discussion yeah. of the future. It's we hear a lot about the problems Japan yeah. is facing. The yeah. population is getting older. It's shrinking.
Yes, yes.
But a lot of what we get from the yes. top is more of the same.
So that's your current research.
That is my current yeah. project, yeah.
So the before?
And before, I did a lot of work on addiction and recovery, particularly alcoholism in Japan, and how people then tried to recover from that, and the programs they were part of, the groups they joined, everything that was involved in that process.
Oh, so I think your research area is, it seems really broad. But what is the streamline, so run through your research topics consistently?
So a lot of what I've written about is related to Japanese men who identify as alcoholics, so a connection between masculinity and alcoholism. Exactly,
yeah.
yes, yes. So particularly thinking about how when a man in Japan yeah. stops drinking or can no longer yeah. drink or feels that it's now impossible for yeah. them to drink, what happens to their sense of masculinity? Yeah. Are they still a man when that happens?
Ah, yes, yes. So you are the man, so you have to drink more like that.
Exactly.
Yes, yes, yes. Imagine easy, and I experience a lot of like that. So I want to dive deep about this theme, because I love drinking also, yeah. And why you made, what made you to start this really fabulous research, so masculinity and alcoholism?
Yeah, it's definitely tied to the first time I came to Japan. The first time I came to Japan, I was 17 years old. I was still a high school student. Yeah. And I went to Kyushu, yeah. to Nagasaki and Sasebo.
And so study program was?
So I was a camp counselor at an English yes. summer camp. So it was junior high school and high school students in Nagasaki are from the Kyushu area, and they wanted to learn some English. Yes. So they came to this camp for the summer. So I was one of the English speakers.
Really fun.
It was. Yeah. It was a really fun experience. And it was also the first time when I was 17 and on one of our days off right before we came home, yeah. we went to me and the other Americans.
Yeah.
Went to an izakaya.
Really?
Yes. And we had heard they wouldn't check our IDs, and we were very nervous. And we ordered beers, yeah. and they never checked. So the first beer I ever bought and drank was at an izakaya in Kyushu when I was 17.
So your first experience of alcohol?
Exactly.
Yeah, that was Japanese izakaya.
It was
izakaya.
In Japan, and that was also then. Yeah. I don't think I maybe realized it at the time, but the first time I started thinking about drinking and drinking culture in Japan and differences yeah. between different countries and different cultures around how you drink, what you drink, when you can drink, all these really interesting questions.
Oh, really? So that means that in Japan, people can get alcohol easily more than US.
Much, much easier.
Much,
yes.
Much easier.
Yes.
For how?
So I think an interesting, in the United States, the drinking age is 21.
Yeah, 21.
And in Japan, it's 20.
Yeah.
But in the US, it's fairly strictly enforced. I'm
strictly
45 years old now, and I have a big gray beard, yes. But at the grocery store, people still check my ID in the United States.
In Japan, now, so we announce by myself, so we are adult like that.
Right.
But in the US, so the ID is checked.
Every time, yeah, yeah, every time. And I've never had my ID checked in Japan. That just never happens.
Yes,
nobody's ever asked me for that.
No.
I have to push the button like everyone else, maybe at a convenience store in Japan or something like that, but it really doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, meaningless.
So, yeah, very meaningless gesture.
But so, before, even though before, no check at all.
Before, absolutely not. Yeah, I mean, Japan has, there's less of them now, but there are the vending machines where you can buy alcohol.
So we can buy, alcohol by vending
exactly,
machine,
yeah.
Yes, easily. So is there anything about alcohol you were surprised?
I think related to what we were just talking about, I think tolerance and acceptance of public drunkenness in
public
Japan.
Public drunkenness
is very much the biggest thing that you can...
Like the inside train
inside
at
nighttime. Inside the train, in major areas of a city. Mm. So, parts of the city where there's lots of bars or izakayas.
Yes.
And then after that, everything that you see, so people falling asleep on the sidewalk or...
Yes, people are sleeping so because of they're too drunk.
They have to have too much to drink.
On the road.
That is, it's still something, even after all these years, that I find quite surprising. It's something you really don't see, at least in the United States, but is relatively common in Japan.
Yeah, I saw.
Particularly in bigger cities. Yeah,
I have seen that. And maybe last year, so Metro poster, you should not sleep after drunk on the road like that.
Right. These messages of kind of trying to encourage people to maybe not do that. But I always find those interesting because if they've gone so far to make a poster, it means that it's happening a lot.
Yes.
So there's a recognition that this is something that frequently happens, but there maybe isn't a lot done to encourage people to change their behavior. Yes. It's just go do this somewhere else instead of maybe stop drinking to the point where you're passing out on the sidewalk.
And not only sleep, but also sometimes, disaster thing like a vomit.
Yes.
I have seen many times in train.
I have too, many times. What I'm always interested about with that is, I guess we could call it like the infrastructure in Japan.
For vomit things?
For taking care of that.
Yeah.
Really? So you have, these special vacuums.
Special vacuums.
So if you go to Shinjuku, Tokyo Station, all the, major train stations, big izakayas, they will have a vomit vacuum. So something
special that can, vomit vacuum.
Exactly, yeah. So
really? I don't know that.
It's, we can look for it tonight. We're recording this on a Friday. So tonight, I'm sure they will be used quite a lot around Tokyo.
Oh, yeah. I think so. Yeah, this is a Friday.
Yes, it's Friday night. So, so everything behind that really fascinates me. Somebody has thought about a way to clean up vomit because there's a lot of it. Yeah. Somebody has built this, special machine just to do that. Yes. So there's, that machine represents a lot of thought, a lot of time, a lot of hours, a lot of research to create something because you know this will be a problem instead of maybe talking about that problem or maybe trying to confront that problem in different ways.
So for your research, so you worked as a bartender at a Japanese bar.
Yes.
So when and how long?
So this is when I was a graduate student and I was doing research for my dissertation.
Yeah.
So this was around 2007, 2008, and I worked at a bar in Hiro.
Oh.
So it was a somewhat nicer bar. We had a very international
customers. Area. Yes. And sophisticated area.
Somewhat, yeah, people always had enough money to pay their bill, that kind of thing. So it was a nice bar to work in and to observe different groups of people and how they drank. So we would have Americans, we'd have a lot of Europeans, and a lot of Japanese who would all come in at different times.
So it's your way, so you yourself experienced directly something when you research.
Yeah, so that's particularly in anthropology, that's how you do research. We have this idea of participant observation.
Oh, participant observation. Yeah.
You're supposed to participate as much as possible, and while you're participating, you observe as much as possible. Mm. So you need to be, to the extent that is possible, you need to be part of what's happening. Yeah.
And I guess when you worked as a bartender, you saw many interesting sights. So could you share some most impressive story?
So I think about alcohol? The most connecting thing that I saw is how much of a performance drunkenness is. Drunkenness as a performance.
Drunkenness as a performance.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah.
So I think maybe because it was a bar in Hiro, and it was often a place where people started drinking. It was not the second or the third stop. Yeah. So they were often coming in not having had anything to drink
sober.
Before. They're coming in sober, sitting down, you know, sort of organizing themselves. But immediately when they get their first drink, and usually it's
cheers,
beer,
like
and you do cheers, you do kanpai, immediately after that, people's behavior changes, often changes very fast,
really?
Very dramatically.
Immediately after.
Immediately. So one sip of beer, and then voices get louder. The topics you can talk about start to change, so you can complain. Yeah. You can maybe talk about things that are a little more naughty, I guess we could say. So there's this very immediate shift.
Like magic.
It is like magic, that suddenly everyone can behave very differently.
Yeah.
And the amount of alcohol they've consumed is quite small at that point. So it's very clear that you're now performing as a drunk person. And I was always intrigued by that would start. And people might have, you know, one, two, three drinks at our place before going somewhere else. But when it was time to pay the bill, immediately people would go back to being
normal.
I mean, maybe you're now, you've had a little bit to drink, but they could very quickly switch and calculate how much everybody owed and get all the money together, make sure, you know, we have enough. So all of that could be done very easily.
Yeah.
You could have this switch from drunk to, well,
from
not sober,
to sober,
but certainly much more sober than you were a minute ago to take care of something, to pay the bill. And then you could switch back to being drunk and you could go on your way to, you know, the next stop or wherever you were going after you left my place.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. So we start, cheers, kanpai, switch.
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 Immediately switch. Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah.
Everyone can
and then
be,
the bill comes, switch.
Switch back.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then I think maybe as the night goes on, that switch maybe does start to become more difficult perhaps, but it was definitely very much this playing this role of I'm now a drunk person and there are things I can do that even a minute ago I can't do.
Mm.
And I always found that to be a really fascinating thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I can imagine easily and maybe, sometimes, certainly we pretend. So, I am drunk, drunk like this. Why? Why do you think?
I think it allows for some things to happen that couldn't happen when you were sober. So, I think there's a lot of connections made in Japan to that moment of drinking. I think that's part of why it's so important in Japan.
Oh, yes, yes.
And so I think when you have something that's clearly defined as we're now drinking and I can start to do these different things, I can start to behave in certain ways, that becomes something that's important for people, mm-hmm. something that they turn to, they mm-hmm. use maybe mm-hmm. to say something they yes. wanted to say yes. but didn't think they could say
so
when they're sober.
We think we can make human relationships smoother.
Exactly.
Yeah. And also, you know the word, Japanese word, bureko?
Yes.
Yeah. Bureko is we can act or say something bold or rude things because during this is the alcoholic drinking party.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we can say anything rude to my boss.
Yeah.
And once the party ends, so we forget that's the end. But the problem is sometimes
we don't always forget.
We cannot forget.
I think there's it's
that's a
different set of rules
yes.
instead of no rules. We'll often bureko is often
no
associated
yes.
with, you know, no rules.
Yes.
I can say whatever I want. I can tell my boss how terrible I think his decision was. But the reality is it's not that. There are still very much some rules. You can't just do anything in that moment. You just have to follow a different set of expectations and rules. And maybe you can, you certainly do some things that you couldn't do when you're sober, but there are still limits. There are still restrictions on what's possible.
So I think, if we cannot say bold things without alcohol, we should not say such things.
I agree. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
Yes.
それなら朝日新聞デジタルの紙面ビューアーとポッドキャストはどう？紙面なら見出しの大きさで大事なニュースが一目でわかるし、ポッドキャストは通勤中でもながら聞きできるよ。
いつでもどこでも
朝日新聞。
So the drunkenness as a performance is really, really fabulous. And maybe we can liberate themselves by the power of alcohol or,
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I want to ask, what is the masculinity and the alcoholism?
The connection between those.
Yes.
So I think that's, it's a really strong connection. And I think it's a connection that's been in Japan for a long time. But I think most basically we could think that, a really huge part of being a man in Japan is drinking and is drinking with other men. So you have a lot of interesting words. I think nomunikation is a good one. So, drinking communication that you need to be drinking in order to communicate or talk about certain things. And I think that word is very much used for men and applied to men much more so than women.
Yes.
So the idea that to be a man in Japan means you go out, you drink with other men, you socialize with other men in these drinking settings is an incredibly powerful one. And that was really something that that I thought a lot about in my research, because the people I was working with, and the majority of them were men, can't drink anymore. So it really then, it makes it almost impossible for them to be men. Many people don't see them as men anymore because they don't drink. So I really see it as absolutely fundamental to Japanese ideas of masculinity.
Yes. I experience a lot of such things, like when we are drinking. So someone who do not want to drink anymore, so he's a man. And, otokodaro, because you are a man, so you should drink
you
more
have
like
to
that.
Drink
yes,
more.
Yes,
yeah.
yes.
And just that, just a word like that, right? How simple, but how powerful that is. You're literally challenging that person's existence.
Yes.
And you are denying them an ability to have autonomy, have bodily autonomy. Like they now have to do something that they don't want to do that is going to make them feel bad, maybe is going to make them vomit and they'll have to go find the vacuum later.
yes.
So you're doing forcing all these things upon this person in a way that is really powerful because most of those men would then pick up the beer or the sake or whatever it is and drink it.
And now I notice I have never experienced like such things. So women do not want to drink anymore. People never say, oh, not at all, like, you are women, so you should not.
Exactly,
use
right.
No. Yeah,
and in many ways, it would often maybe be the opposite, right? That you, oh, are you sure you want to drink more? So I think there's still maybe issues or things to think about in terms of...
So maybe alcohol drinking is a kind of symbol of manliness.
Absolutely, yeah, I think most definitely. You. And I was always interested in advertising for alcohol in Japan.
Yeah.
And you know, if you go back like to Showa era ads, a lot of them are very masculine, right?
You
know, so they have, you know, famous Japanese movie stars who are, you know, these big, strong men. And then today we have a lot of Japanese athletes. Mm. So, you know, people who are
strong,
very much big and strong and powerful. In many ways, I think like Shohei Ohtani is kind of interesting in that he has thus far refused to do that.
Yes,
he's the exception that proves the rule, right? That everyone else who was offered that seemed very willing to
maybe
to do
younger
that.
Generation is changing. So I want to ask about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. Yes. But I think there's absolutely some important changes.
Yeah, I want to ask about masculinity and alcoholism in another aspect. So I have once covered the story of Old Boys Club.
Yes.
Old Boys Club is made up of the unspoken agreements only passed among men. Like, and the one characteristic of Old Boys Club is things decided in the night drinking party.
Exactly.
So I think the Old Boys Club and masculinity and alcoholism can be situated in the same context.
Absolutely.
How do you think?
Absolutely, I think no communication is, you know, drinking communication. I think that's kind of a polite word or maybe even a kind of cute word. I think Old Boys Club is the more
negative,
correct word. The more, it's certainly the more negative word, but I think it's also the more accurate word for what we're talking about. That creating these drinking spaces, you know, whether it's, you know, a really expensive host bar, whether it's an izakaya, you know, keeping those as very masculine places allows everything that is implied by Old Boys Club to continue. So it, you know, we hear a lot in certainly Japan and other parts of the world about, you know, trying to push for more equality, more equity, trying to have greater participation by groups who have been marginalized in the past. And I think there are some important efforts that are doing that, but until we also recognize some of these other places and spaces, like, you know, the late night drinking session that is still very much a men's space.
Yes.
And even if a woman is there...
I was there.
and it was probably difficult. It was probably uncomfortable.
Yeah, uncomfortable, totally.
It was probably not somewhere where... you know, any consideration was given to, you know, you fully participating or being part of this. And I think that's a pretty universal experience for most women in Japan who have careers, who are working. So it's a way, I think, of hiding the fact that there is still a lot of really intense discrimination. I mean, everywhere, but we're talking about Japan. And you can hide it behind words like communication, or, you know, other, you know, talking about drinking as a cultural practice. But if we really dig down to what's happening, you're trying to create situations, you're trying to create places and spaces where discrimination is still possible. And so the Old Boys Club is very much still alive and well and functioning. And maybe also hiding behind these other things.
That's true. And also, you attended the Danshukai. Danshukai means so the people who addict alcohol gathering to help each other. So why you attended and how many times?
So there's a lot of... So there's two groups. There's Danshukai and there's AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've also gone to NA meetings, Narcotics Anonymous. They're smaller in Japan. But... for all those groups, the meeting really is the primary place where the members come together. And so a lot of people will go to a meeting every day in the evening and they gather together, they come together. Yes. There's a structure, there's a format to the meeting. Yes. But a lot of it is yes. talking. Mm. Everyone, if you don't want to talk, you don't have to, but pretty much everyone takes a turn talking about, sometimes there's a theme to the meeting. Sometimes they just talk generally, but talking about maybe their past yes. experiences with mm-hmm. drinking or some of their struggles right now, situations they've mm-hmm. had where it was difficult or challenging. So that was really the main part of my research. Oh, I went to more than 200.
Mm. I
stopped counting 200. After 200 of these meetings yes. Throughout, mostly in Tokyo. I went to a few in some other parts yeah. of Japan as well. But this is really where members come together and they share their experiences. Yes, they yes, this yes. is where being an alcoholic is very much on display and everything that they're going through is talked about, put out in the open.
So is there any episode, the masculinity and the alcoholism?
Many.
Yeah. Could you share some?
So many. Yeah. yeah. The one that I always still remember, partly because of how sad I found it, how frustrating yeah. I found it. It was, I think a lot of why I remember this one so much is the person who was yeah. saying it was about my age at the time. It was a younger man. He was in his mid, late 20s, and I was in my early 30s at the time. And he lived with his girlfriend. They lived together. They'd been together since high school, and they'd been drinking yeah. since high school, and they drank heavily. Yeah. They drank every day. Yeah. And again, this is true since they were quite young. And they had graduated from high school, but then that was the end of their education. So they worked a lot of part-time jobs. Mm. So money was always an issue. They never had enough money. And they also were, you know, they woke up every morning with a hangover. Mm. They woke up not feeling well. So it was this really difficult, exhausting, you know, painful life that they were living. Mm. And around his mid-20s, he decided he didn't want to live like this anymore. He wanted to change. And so on his own, he started looking around for, you know, help. What can I do? And he found AA, started coming to the meetings, and it was having success. So
he
stopped drinking. Yeah. And when I first met him, he had been sober for a couple of months. Mm. So the AA side of things was actually going really well.
Yeah.
The problems he was facing, though, were at home with his girlfriend, that she didn't accept what he was doing. She didn't understand it. She didn't want to understand
his addiction.
His addiction, why he would want to stop. And so the story he told one night is she would drink beer in front of him. She would have the big
in front of him
every night. Usually it'd start with beer, maybe move on to something else. But she would drink the big can, so the 500 milliliter cans of beer. And she would drink, or Hoppelschuh, or whatever it might be. But she would drink almost all of it. There'd be a little bit left in the bottom. And then she would throw the cans at him. And she'd say, you know, you're not a man anymore, so you clean it up.
Really?
So this really, like, you know, nasty, mean disposition and view of him, you know, questioning his masculinity, not seeing him
as a
not man.
Because you cannot drink alcohol.
Exactly. Oh. You don't drink, so you're not a man. So clean up after me, take care of me. You know, there's, you know, beers now being spilled all over their apartment and she's making a big mess. She's being very, you know, violent and rude to him. All because he didn't want to live the way they were living. He wanted a change. And the biggest issue he was then facing is AA's position.
Yeah.
And again, we have to remember AA's an American organization. Mm. It's coming with, you know, maybe very an American view of things, is that if you change, if you stop drinking, if you start working AA's program, people will be happy for you. People will be proud of you. People will say, oh, that's such a good thing.
Yeah,
I'm so
really
happy you're doing
good
this.
Good things for you.
Like yeah, that, it will remove a lot of the bad things in your life. And
but the reality is...
The reality, particularly when you take something from the United States and just drop it in Japan, is very different. She didn't want to know what AA was. She didn't care about it. And she rejected what he was doing. She thought it was bad. She was angry at him. She was frustrated. And AA didn't really have anything to offer him that could help. They didn't really know how to react or respond to this. So he's in this really impossible situation where, you know, he has this girlfriend. He has this long relationship with her. She now doesn't see him as a man. She's now being very abusive with him. He wants to keep working AA. He can't move out. He doesn't have enough money to, you know, move somewhere else on his own. So all of these things put him in just this really impossible situation. And
tragedy.
The group that is supposed to be helping him with this also isn't offering him much in the way of advice or solutions to what he can do. So that one, I mean, this was 2007, 2008. I've really never forgotten that story because it really is just
It's so really awful. Impressive. Yeah, unforgettable story, I think. Recently, in Japan, not so tolerate to alcohol as before, but even still loose, but anyway. But particularly, younger generation do not, there are many people do not take drinking alcohol.
Right.
So how do you think about that?
I think it's a really interesting moment right now. I think this is a really interesting change or shift that's happening where, particularly young adults in Japan, people in their 20s and their 30s are much more able, much more willing to say no, to not go drinking or to only go drinking a little bit or to, you know, stop when they want to stop. So I really think we're maybe in the middle or in the beginning of a really interesting change. And I'm really curious to see how this continues. Is this going to only become more and more of a thing? And are we going to see, you know, my new research is on the future. So is the future going to be one where people are very comfortable saying no and not going drinking? And are ideas like numination or maybe the old boys club that it's protecting, are those going to start to be more easily challenged as we, you know, continue with this? So I think right now is a really, really interesting moment to think about drinking culture in Japan, what's going to happen.
I agree. And this is the final question. So Paul, you yourself drink alcohol?
I do, yes.
Oh, really? So what do you like?
I love craft beer. Locally made beer. So I've also been very happy to see how there are more and more of those in Japan right now. I can remember even 5 or 10 years ago, it was often really hard to find a good craft beer. And now there's quite a lot of really delicious ones to choose from. So yes, I drink and I really love beer quite a lot. And I think there's a good maybe balance to be struck in terms of my research. Yes. And if my research is really focused on addiction. So thinking about, you know, how did people get addicted? What are the other factors or issues that brought them here? Yes. I think it's often maybe too easy to focus on the substance, whether it's alcohol or another drug. And I think that often hides the fact that people usually find themselves addicted because of other traumatic, other difficult, other painful things in their life. So I think trying to focus more on how and why somebody became addicted instead of alcohol is the thing that gets you addicted. I think for everyone, that's a much more productive way to think about this issue.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. So today's our guest was Paul Christensen. And I'm Noriko Akiyama. You enjoy this program. Thank you very much. See you next time. Bye-bye. So everyone could enjoy this program. So I myself love alcohol too. I love wine. But most important thing is balance, I learned today. So thank you very much. See you next time. Bye. Noriko Akiyama.